Friends and neighbors, whether you have frown lines, crow's feet, or a face that is uncannily plump and baby smooth, we'd like to welcome you to the show. My name is Ben.
My name is Nolan. Ben, I couldn't help but notice you got a little bag and sag in action going on under those eyes there. Can I shoot some sausage poison up in there to help you out?
Well, I appreciate you using it by its real name. I'm going for more of like a haggard investigator, dangerous cop on, you know, off the res.
World weary.
I'm doing like a Serpico thing. I'm working up toward it. But it's true. I don't know if everybody noticed what Noel just said. You called it sausage poison?
Sausage poison, my friend. No. I have a syringe of it right here on the ready.
No, riddle me squirt, this. Squirt. Riddle me this, Noel, before you stab me in the face with this. Where's this sausage poison thing coming from? Is there another name for that?
The sausage poison party?
I would buy that album.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like fun. It's you know, a sausage poison by any other name. It's still sausage poison, but we know and love it today as a little thing called Botox that has taken the fashion and celebrity world by storm.
I'm going to tell you about something that we didn't talk about off air, but it really creeped me out, and I'm going to keep the names out of it out of respect for these people. So I know someone who is a dude in his early 20s who has had multiple Botox injections.
Is it Jonathan Strickland?
It is not. It is. I don't know if it's – I don't think it's Jonathan, no. I don't know of anybody, any of our coworkers who are Botox fans. Yeah. But it is an increasingly common procedure, right? And it used to be something that people would just most Americans would just hear about on television. But now that, you know, when I learned that this guy I know was getting Botox injections in his early 20s, Noel, and he says he has to have them, it hit me how common this procedure is becoming.
And just, you know, disclaimer right up front, utterly no shade. Do what you want to do. Do what makes you feel good.
It's your body.
It's totally your body. But yeah, no, and I said, you know, the fashion and world of celebrity was taken by storm, but it has totally trickled down to us, you know, everyday folk. And like, there are Botox parties you can have. Like, people will go to gyms and set up a little Botox station because it's an easy little quick procedure. It's just a syringe that's loaded with this stuff that is a processed form of a bacteria that actually gives you botulism. And we talked about sausage poison because, as it turns out, the guy that discovered this stuff found it in a batch of bad blood sausages in Germany in the early 1800s.
That's right. We can trace the success and prevalence of what is called Botox today to the discovery made by this physician, Justinus Kerner, who, as Noel said, encountered a batch of dangerous sausage gone wrong in the early 1800s. What Kerner discovered specifically were the spores of something called Clostridium botulinum microbes.
Yeah, and as it turns out, there were multiple strains of it that were discovered. One in particular is what has become used widely as Botox because it has the property of relaxing muscles. So, you know, if you have these lines on your face and then you inject this stuff, it relaxes the muscle and causes the lines to kind of disappear. And it's interesting because this scientist, as was sort of practice in the day, he didn't have anybody to try this stuff out on, so he just shot himself up with it. Mm-hmm. It literally, like, a thing that he knew was poisoning, sickening people. He just decided, maybe this might find something interesting out here. And he started injecting it in himself, and he discovered some pretty interesting properties.
Right. And we do have to say, in Kerner's defense, his bona fides come thusly. Before he experimented on himself, this is a quote from our friend Laurie L. Dove. He rigorously tested hundreds of sausages to find these different varieties of botulism or botulinum toxin. And it turns out that it was pretty common to have dodgy sausage in Germany at this time because there were, you know, lower standards of food safety, to be honest.
Of course.
And eventually this led to something that sounds hilarious but is tragic and real, which was, you know, scores of people dying due to sausage poisoning outbreaks. This inspired Kerner. He worked himself up to self-experimentation, which sounds so crazy today, but you're absolutely right. And he discovered it had this muscle-relaxing effect that you had mentioned, and that it was not fatal, and that it could alter appearance to a degree.
That's right. In addition to that muscle-relaxing effect, it also could cause vision problems, problems swallowing, vomiting, and severe weakness of muscles when just, you know, used directly or experienced ingesting it through the tainted food. And Kerner actually came up with a pretty clever name for this stuff. He called it Wurstgift, which means sausage poison. But I think of it as a sausage present.
There we go. There we go. But then the evolution of Botox applications continues for decades, right? And there's a big breakthrough about 70 years after Kerner.
It also involved tainted food. In this case, it was a bespoiled ham that was brought to a funeral. Talk about adding insult to injury. Some people died, actually. Three people died, and 23 people were paralyzed by this tainted ham. And a doctor by the name of Emile Pierre Van Ermingham of Belgium had to investigate this botulism outbreak. And it's interesting, he actually studied under Robert Koch, Dr. Robert Koch, who found out about anthrax and tuberculosis and cholera.
And the bacterial causes.
The bacterial causes, exactly. And Ermingham was able to make the connection between botulism and that spore we talked about that he called Bacillus botulinus. And it was later renamed Clostridium botulinum.
And this is a watershed moment for this science, because in the years afterwards, people were able to identify more strains of botulinum toxin, eventually arriving at 7 total, 4 of which could actually cause illness in human beings.
That's right. And we're getting some of this info from a great article on NBC News called Frozen in Time, Botox Over the Years, From Bad Sausage to Brow Razor, A Poisonous Path to Pretty. That is some good alliteration.
That's
right there.
That's a good title.
It's neat, though, too, because as we move into the 40s and World War II, folks were experimenting with this stuff as, like, a serious chemical weapon.
Yeah, according to a 2004 article in Clinical Medicine by the Journal of the Royal College of Physicians in London, there was a plan on the U.S. side to have Chinese sex workers slip tiny pills into the food or drink of high-ranking Japanese officers in the hope that this would prove fatal. They got far enough to actually make the capsules, but they never put it into action. But yeah, as Noel said, they were actively planning to weaponize it. And now, you know, you can have a party and put a version of it in your face.
And that stuff you put in your face is the botulinum toxin type A. Because in the 60s and 70s, the research into that in particular was accelerated, and it was meant to help with muscle disorders. There was a doctor by the name of Alan B. Scott of the Smith Kettlewell Eye Research Foundation in San Francisco who did animal studies with that type A, and he hypothesized that you could actually use this stuff to help cure people who had crossed eyes. Cross-eyed? People who were cross-eyed? Mm-hmm. There's an official name for that. It is called strabismus. I was not aware of that. And it is a type of, quote, ophthalmic dystonia. Mm-hmm. And they found that when injecting this stuff into the muscles around the afflicted eyes, it loosened them up and caused them to go straight.
So now we see the transformation from a poison in your sausage or your, what was the phrase used? Bespoiled ham. Mm. I like that one. To a weapon of war or would-be weapon of war, to something that may, it turns out, have health benefits. In 1978, Dr. Alan Scott gets FDA approval to inject more, to experiment on people with botulinum toxin.
And he trademarked it as Oculinum, and that was the name of the company that he incorporated with that patent.
And by the late 80s, drug makers were paying attention. A manufacturer named Allergan purchased Oculinum, or purchased rather, let's be technical here, purchased the rights to distribute it. And then the FDA approved this not just for strabismus, as Noel mentioned, but also for spasms of the eyelid muscle, better known as blepharospasms.
And it wasn't long after Allergan acquired this serum that they also got approval from the FDA to change the name. I didn't realize that was a thing. I guess it makes sense because you can't be, you know, that's why the names of pharmaceuticals are often a little dull, because I think they have to have some aspect in them that ties to the actual substance, the actual material that's in the product.
You can't call things smile pills.
Yeah, exactly. And they changed it to Botox, which was a fun portmanteau of botulinum toxin type A, Botox.
Now, here we are. We've gone through the discovery of this stuff, the application of it, and the various uses people tried to find for it that didn't quite work out, like a weapon of war. Again, thank goodness we went with some health benefits instead. I'm very impressed. Good on you, human species. So the big question then was, how did we get from this sausage poison to a wrinkle treatment, right? It occurs in the 90s when a Canadian ophthalmologist named Dr. Jean Carruthers notices that her patients with eye spasms are starting to lose their frown lines, which is, you know, a specific type of line on the face that comes with aging, right?
Yeah, it's like, oh my goodness, Louise, not only is your eye not twitching anymore, you also have taken on a new youthful glow.
Mm-hmm. And
because that's how people talked in the 90s.
In Canada, yeah. Yes, yes. These are accurate reenactments. And in 1992, Dr. Carruthers, along with her husband, who was a dermatologist, published a study that noted this C. botulinum A exotoxin could be used to treat brow wrinkles, and they had no idea about how quickly the rest of the world would catch on. So dermatologists across North America took note, in the United States as well. By 1997, Botox use for wrinkles had spiked to the point that Canada ran out and people began to panic.
And it's like, you know, I have a pretty distinct memory of like when you started hearing about Botox. And it wasn't for me anyway until the early 2000s. And that's because the FDA in the United States didn't give Allergan approval to use Botox for that application that the Canadians were so fond of already until 2002. And that's when they were able to get that approval for the temporary improvement of appearance of moderate to severe glabellar lines, or those vertical frown lines between your brow that, you know, mm-hmm. folks are want to get rid of.
You hear them called worry lines.
Worry lines. And this is not only – this is in men and women, and they can start to form as early as like 19 or 20 years old.
Mm-hmm. This was a genuine treatment for something that a lot of people were very insecure about. You know, people wanted these wrinkles gone, and the FDA would keep issuing approval for different uses, right? And Botox became amazingly popular. I think you and I and super producer Casey all remember the glut of advertising, right? It started to show up in fictional shows too. Somebody would get Botox, right? You started to see advertisements for it in malls, in gyms, and it would be called the, you know, the beauty secret in the health mags or the different lifestyle magazines. And then, of course, inevitably, knockoffs come into play, right? Which leads to one of my favorite phrases that we found here, Botox.
Botox. That's rough.
That's rough.
What is this? Is it like baby laxative? Like what?
I don't know, but I am not a Botox authority, thank goodness. But we do also have to caution against using some kind of thing like that. Did somebody make homegrown botulism? Did they just get the right kind of stuff to grow on some bad sausages?
Just do it in a petri dish and in their closet.
That's not a good look.
No. But a lot of people in the United States, a lot of people did seem to think that Botox was a good look. It spiked like 700% since the early 2000s. That's according to the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. But that number is only tied to that cosmetic use. And as we've already been through quite a few other uses for this toxin that are under review currently or actually in practice. And that includes the treatment of cerebral palsy, a condition that involves severely contracted muscles. So it makes sense that you could use this to ease those spasms.
It also has success with easing muscle spasms from multiple sclerosis or, and this surprised me, treating migraines.
But as with anything that, experiences such a meteoric rise so quickly, there's a backlash sometimes, right? And in that timeline on NBC, they talk about this Botox backlash and terms, you know, thrown around like poker face and joker face and the idea that it's just a little too available and maybe people are doing it a little too willy-nilly and not thinking about maybe some of the side effects. And even some celebrities that were all about it are a little less willing to, you know, come right out and say, this is something that I do.
So then I guess the question is also, is this a fad, mm-hmm. right? Or is this just society adjusting to this treatment? You know, we're not the kind of people who take pleasure in, mocking other people or ridiculing their choices. As far as we're concerned, I think I can speak for both of us here. If you're not hurting somebody, then do as you will. You know, I wouldn't want to bully anybody for making a choice about their body that made them feel comfortable, confident, etc. But it is strange, and I don't think most people know that this all goes back to one guy in the 1800s who said, what's wrong with all this sausage?
Yep, and that tainted tube meat, is big, big money. Despite this backlash we talked about, Allergan reported that in 2016, they finished with a 7% rise in net revenues, and that is attributed to $3.9 billion in fourth quarter sales.
Holy smokes. Well, I feel like it would be a little bit too personal a question to ask you, Noel, or you, Casey, if you would get this kind of stuff. So I'll go out and say it. I think by the time that I am like elderly, I'll probably just be able to download myself into a robot or to get some sort of CRISPR level genetic treatment. So I don't know how long the age of plastic surgery is going to exist in general.
I totally agree, Ben. I look forward to fear when that day comes. I just want to rattle off real quick a couple of the other products that Allergan peddles.
Oh, good call.
Leading, of course, the list is Botox, followed by Restasis, Ozurdex, Lenzess, Vraylar, Viberzi, Kybella. I know Kybella. I think I've seen that commercial. No idea what it does. And Lostrin.
These sound like, if I'm living in some sort of He-Man Masters of the Universe world, this sounds like this is my traveling crew of adventurers.
Corella! Lostrin! Come hither, Verbeezy!
See? I think it works. I know it's a tough job, but whenever I hear about naming cars or naming drugs,
yeah,
I always think, whose job is that? Who sits there and goes, Proton? No, wait, Protonica. You know, that seems like a pretty sweet gig. If you have that job, please write to us. Let us know if you're taking suggestions.
Ho, ho. What thither?
Oh, no. I think I remember this noise. Do you remember this?
Not a good noise.
Okay.
I guess it's time.
It's time, gentlemen.
Jonathan Strickland, the Quister, you've returned yet again?
I am back. I am back to quiz you on things that may or may not have happened. And of course, as we all know, it is your duty to, within the span of 3 minutes, determine whether the nonsense I spout is real Or have I just made it up, please?
I tire of your games, Quizster.
Oh, too bad, Noel, for this has become a permanent segment sporadically throughout the course of this podcast. And so, let's see. I got to come up with an arbitrary rule. I know. We're talking sausages today, are we not?
Yes.
Yeah, kind of. Roundabout.
So at the beginning of every question you have for me within the span of those 3 minutes, once the timer begins, you must precede your request with, "Please, sir, can I have some more?"
Oh, boy. Okay. And we have to try.
You need to twist your Oliver as hard as you can.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
that's what makes the voice so high-pitched.
This is going to be cartoonishly Cockney.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's because the query I have, the quandary, if you will, the stuff what I might have made up all might be true, happens to be of English origin. Are you prepared to hear the scenario?
We are prepared.
All right. There's a fist bump happening right in front of me.
We even blew it up.
It's extremely insulting to do that on an audio podcast, but we will continue nonetheless. I will signal to you, Master Bolin, to pull the giant lever on our timekeeping device, which, as we have previously established, takes up the entire back wall of this studio.
Very expensive.
And most of the budget. All right. I'll get a running start.
It's a long one, so don't worry. I'll point to you. When it's time.
What a surprise.
These are getting longer each time. Listen, you left me with a lot of time on my hands to kind of put this together. And I mean, I'm saying it's equal blame here. All right, let's get on with it. Here we go. In the UK, sausages are sometimes called bangers, as in the famous dish, bangers and mash. But why bangers? Well, it is because in the early 19th century, before English law forced slaughterhouses to relocate far away from urban centers, the denizens of good old London town could hear the sound of the abattoir workers striking livestock over the head with a blunt instrument in preparation for the slaughter. The sausages produced by the packing industry then took on the name bangers, and the nickname stuck even as the slaughterhouses were forced to relocate further away by the mid-1800s.
Getting a running start, and...
Whoa!
Okay, we're going.
So I always just assumed that it was because sausages are, like, tied together and that if you, like, walked with them, they would bang together.
Whoa, you eat some crazy rock hard sausages.
Well, no, like, you know, they come on, like, a string. You got a string of sausages, and, like, if you could sling them over your shoulder, and as you walk, they would bang together, right?
I don't know. Please, sir, more, have some more.
Close enough. Go ahead.
Whatever, that was beautiful.
It's good.
All right, so, in what time period did this occur?
Early 1800s. By the mid-1800s, the UK passed laws that forced slaughterhouses away from urban centers for cleanliness issues.
Please, sir, may I have some more?
You may, no.
Oh, I don't have anything.
Oh, well, that's fine.
Did you just want to do the voice?
Consider yourself at home.
I do. Mm. Yeah.
I'm really tempted to say true. One thing that's making me question it is that it would be strange for the food manufacturers to use that name. I could see the street level.
Oh, this was the nickname that people adopted for the sausages. It wasn't marketed as bangers.
But why not call a steak a banger then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or like a hot club track.
Yeah.
That's different.
How
wasn't until many, many years later. That's what we call bangers now, is like a really tight track.
Yeah. Casey, could I have a gunshot and an air horn? That is the best use of our 3 minutes. All right, so I'm gonna hazard true on
really?
This one.
Okay.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking false, because I really do feel like the bangers is like they bang together. So shall we flip for it? Rochambeau,
death match, 1, 2, 3, shoot.
And we're supposed to call out what we shot, okay?
Right. Okay, yeah.
Ready? One, two, three, shizzer.
Brock, sorry.
Okay, you beat me.
So you're going with true.
We're going with true. We're locking it in.
Right. Two in a row, you have fallen to the mastery of the Quister.
Hey, man.
Roshimbu always seems like such a good idea, but I really think we should talk these through.
It's a cruel mistress, Roshimbu.
Oh, I feel so good.
I'm a little peeved at you, though, Ben, I gotta say.
That's why I'm a little peeved to you.
What?
I feel like you should be better at rock, paper, scissors. We play it all the time.
That's true.
Like I'm sitting in a big bowl of mashed potatoes. Oh,
is that your Shangri-La?
That's bangers and mash right there, my friend.
Whoa.
In the potato.
Yeah, I'm a little peeved at me, too.
Would you like to hear where the term bangers really came from?
Yeah. Yes, please.
It was a century later during World War One, which at the time they did not call World War One because they were optimists and just called the Great War.
Yeah, they didn't know there was going to be a sequel.
No one had looked at the trailers. World War One, there was a meat shortage in the UK, and so sometimes the meat packers, would make up the difference in the lack of meat with a little extra water content in sausages, which are, of course, tied off in casings. You put a case filled with water, a watertight case filled with water, on a hot surface. The water expands, sometimes causing the case to rupture, resulting in a banging noise, and that is why they're called bangers.
Because they would, pop.
Yes.
Wow.
It's from the popping noise of
That's
the sausages
pretty cool.
themselves.
Well, also, I was wrong, too, then, so I feel better now. I mean, I wasn't...
You did say false.
I did say false, but my explanation was not quite on the mark.
Yes, you never know. You never know. Oh, also, just in case you are curious, the captive bolt pistol was invented in 1903 in Germany.
Don't care.
No.
Oh, I didn't think it was a bolt pistol. I was picturing the hammer.
Right. No, I said blunt instrument. That's why I specifically looked up when was the captive bolt pistol created.
Well, it looks like now we are in a dead heat overall, right? Because we are 2-for-2. So the next one is going to be decisive
for all the beans.
I cannot wait. I bet it's going to be another one about bodies.
Look, man, we have some trends here, but we vary the show. We just also did a great episode on vitamin donuts.
It's true.
I have no response to that. None at all.
That's a first.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for you to wrap this up so I can leave.
Crawl back into your corner.
I'm so tired of this room, guys.
He's got a little palette here with, candles and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that how you read your fake history stories? By candlelight?
Yes, I read my fake history stories by candlelight.
You've got a weathered picture stuck up with a thumbtack. I think it's a dog from the 50s. Is that stock photography?
It's my aunt.
Okay. So on that note, let's hope that we have only lost the battle and not the war in our continuing conflict with the villainous Quister, Jonathan Strickland.
You're here. In the meantime, if you'd like to send us some words of comfort, as we are both emotionally shattered right now, you can write to us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. You can also, send us an e-card or a nice GIF and post it on Ridiculous History on Facebook. You can talk to us on Instagram. We're going to try to do a better job of being part of this online community. and we're going to do that soon in the form of our first ever Facebook Live.
Yes, the rumors that we just started are true, ladies and gentlemen. We are indeed going to be Facebook Live and direct with a Ridiculous History family, and we'd love to meet you IRL, sort of. So drop by, toss us a like, ask us some weird questions, and be prepared for some strange answers.
When is that going to be? Do we know yet, or are we just kind of floating the idea out there, and then we'll nail down the date?
We're planting the seed.
Planting
now.
The seed.
Man, yeah. I'm just excited for everyone to finally see the Quister's amazing costume.
That's definitely going to happen.
That's true. We
it's
do.
Not going to happen.
Things I'm going to have to start working on right away.
You're not invited.
Oh, I'm going to be there.
So how will our first Facebook Live turn out? There are several ways to find out, but you want to watch it live, and we'll let you know exactly when that's happening in an upcoming episode.
Until then, we'd love to shout out our super producer, Casey Pegram, our pal, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, and regular contributor, Lori L. Dove, who wrote the How Stuff Works article, Toxic German Sausages Are Responsible for Botox.
And most importantly, we'd like to thank you for tuning in, giving us a listen, and follow up on that recommendation from my excellent co-host there. Don't be a stranger. Hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. You can write to us directly at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com.
See you next time.
Send more fan mail for the Quizster.